Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz visits China as divisions are deepening between East and West. The German government is divided, too, over what political and trade ties it should have with Beijing. So what impact could Scholz's trip have on future relations? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has become the first Western leader to meet Xi Jinping since the Chinese president tightened his control on power and began an unprecedented third term last month. Scholz is also the first G7 leader to visit China since the pandemic. But the trip has come at a time of deep divisions between Beijing and the West. During the war in Ukraine, China has remained close to Russia, while Germany and the EU have supplied weapons to Kyiv and imposed severe sanctions on Moscow. There are other big divisions, too. The West is concerned about human rights and the treatment of Uyghur Muslims and China's intentions toward Taiwan. But Germany and China's trade relations are extremely important to both. President Xi said he hoped for more cooperation between their countries during what he called a time of change and chaos. And Chancellor Scholz says he wasn't in favor of breaking from China, but wanted a relationship based on equality.
We don't believe in the ideas of decoupling from China, but it's also clear to us that this has something to do with economic ties as equals, with reciprocity, with the issue that access to investment must be provided equally and that no dependencies arise that contribute to the fact that one cannot act freely. That is, at least, the perspective that we're pursuing.
China-Germany relations continue to develop healthily and steadily. We believe that it's a signal sent to the world that we jointly uphold multilateralism and support multipolarity.
While the West and China disagree over a range of issues, they share important trading relationships in a globalized world. Let's have a look at trade between the EU and China and how significant that is to Germany. China was the world's largest exporter in 2020, with its goods and services valued at about $2.3 trillion. Next was the EU at $1.9 trillion and the United States at $1.4 trillion. The EU imported $467 billion worth of goods last year from China. In the other direction, exports from the EU to China were worth $221 billion, less than half the value of what Europe buys from the Chinese. Germany is the EU's top exporter of goods to China. They're valued at $103 billion and made up more than 16% of the EU's total exports to the country in 2021. German imports from China were worth about $97 billion. That's around 22% of the EU's total imports from the country. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in Beijing. Andy Mock, a senior research fellow with the Center for China and Globalization. In Paris, Jasine Weber, a research analyst with the Paris office of the German Marshall Fund of the U.S. and an expert in European security. And in London, Yu Jie, a senior research fellow on China with the Chatham House think tank. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Jasine, let me start with you today. There are many analysts who have said or suggested that German Chancellor Scholz was in China not just to represent Germany's interests, but that he was also there perhaps on behalf of the EU. So let me put it to you, from your vantage point, was Chancellor Scholz in Beijing simply to represent Germany's interests, or was he also there on behalf of the EU?
So what is very important to consider in this context is that interests of any EU member states always are closely linked to what the EU can do and what the EU will do in foreign policy, because basically every decision on foreign policy requires unanimity. So what a member state does in its foreign relations and how it designs its foreign relations always has direct consequences also for the European Union. Of course, and that is also what Scholz stressed before his visit, he was not explicitly there as an EU representative. For that, it would have been necessary to take, for instance, Josep Borrell, the high representative of the EU for everything touching on foreign affairs. But of course, if the German chancellor, as the representative of the biggest EU member state, goes to China, that sends a very clear signal And if he does so right after the party congress, and is the first European to go there, that of course shows that this visit has a certain significance, and also that dealing with China, on the one hand economically, but also on the questions of global governance or global challenges, is a priority in Germany, but also in Europe. Even though this visit was, and I want to stress that, not well received by other Europeans or harshly criticized by many.
Andy, you heard there Jacin talking about the fact that this visit was controversial, that it was criticized by many in Europe. Was, from your vantage point, President Xi the biggest beneficiary of this trip? Did he get more out of it than Chancellor Scholz?
Well, I certainly think President Xi, as the president of China, certainly got something out of this visit, because it does contribute to a more stable and prosperous China. But I think that also we have to recognize that Germany and Europe, and I think even the entire world, benefited from this visit. It's a recognition that, of course, Germany and China have very important business and economic ties. But I think it's also a recognition that we are in a world where national security is becoming increasingly important. And countries like Germany, as Germany, a major economy, major country in the world, but also, as we heard, as one of the most important members in the European Union, recognizes just what a new world we are in with the unfortunate conflict in Ukraine, the related economic chaos that that has caused, that finding a new paradigm for coexisting is vitally important. And I think this is just as important an element of this trip, especially as China recently announced a global security initiative that seeks precisely to address some of the shortcomings of the existing security order.
GA, from your vantage point, just how important is the relationship between China and Germany? And how much are the two countries' economies intertwined? How much are they reliant on each other?
Well, I think a dependence, this word seems to be quite an ugly word, almost become a stigma in European politics these days. Yes, nevertheless, Germany has been one of the major trading partners with China. But however, what I want to stress is, for this visit, firstly, really representing an inflection point that between China and Germany, and also between China and Europe, given the past 2 years, that the relationship between the two countries and between Beijing and Brussels seems to be stranded. So can we actually consider this visit, and perhaps is the somehow that sense of Germany considers seeking to have an open dialogue with China? That's one thing. Now, secondly, I think for this particular visit, the element of politics seems to be taking equal weight as much as the economics, because in the past, compared with the 16 years of Angela Merkel's in office, that seems to be much of the bilateral visit is mostly about business and trade. But really for this one, given the world where we are now, I think the politics also perhaps become even more important than economics in here. And I do not think either the Chinese company, nor the German company, nor the European companies will be able to exclude from the current ever-intense more geopolitical competition.
Jacin, what kind of significance will this meeting between Scholz and Xi have had ahead of the upcoming G20 summit? I'm asking this because Russia is in the G20, but we don't yet know if President Putin is going to be in Bali later this month. Some may see the G20 as an opportunity to start the process of negotiations for some kind of peace in Ukraine. Others may see it as a chance to further isolate Russia. So what role might China be playing here behind the scenes?
Yes, I think that is the question that we are all asking us. This question of how close the alliance between Russia and China actually is, and how much influence Europeans, but also the US, can have on China. And I think that in this regard, it is particularly interesting to basically look at not what we do see, but particularly what we do not see. And at the moment, we do not see that President Xi has been distancing himself very clearly from Russia. Although what is very remarkable in this visit here is that he has drawn together with Chancellor Scholz a very clear red line for the use of nuclear weapons, and also underlined that this is that their use would be irresponsible. So as is the threat of the use of nuclear weapons, and I think that this is already quite a clear warning, and maybe the clearest warning that Putin has received from Beijing over the last, over the last couple of months. And you ask whether there is a whether negotiations might be a topic on the table of the G20. Of course, it will be a question when and how negotiations could potentially start. But I do definitely not see the G20 as a starting point for negotiations, particularly because Europeans have always underlined that the start of these definitely depends on what Ukraine wants in this conflict. And also because I do not think that it is the forum where states could pressure Russia sufficiently. So there might be work on the economic side of that, but I don't see sufficient political weight behind that.
Jia, I saw you nodding along to a lot of what Jazine was saying there. It looked like you wanted to jump in, so please go ahead.
Sure. I mean, I quite agree with the previous speaker. And obviously, I consider the joint press readout after the bilateral meeting between Xi and Scholz, that seems to be Xi has laid very clear the absolute red line is that China does not support Russia to the deployment of nuclear weapons, and China does not support any country to deploy nuclear weapons in here. So I think also that's doesn't come as a surprise to me, because that's very much in line with China's nuclear and disarmament policies. But I would argue, actually, if it is for one thing that could change Xi's stance on Russia's invasion towards Ukraine, perhaps it's a looming prospect that Russia deploying nuclear weapon in part of the Europe, because this would also be seen as a national security, not just for Europe, but also a national security threat for China as well, considering the two countries shared around 4,500 kilometers borders. So deployment of nuclear weapons is quite dangerous for any country.
Andy, I want to ask you a question that's tied to Ukraine as well. The Ukraine war, we all know it's brought deep divisions between East and West. President Xi has refused to get involved in persuading President Putin to change course. This is also having a serious economic impact, especially in Europe, which is a market that is very important to China. So my question is, might the trade consequences of the Ukraine war have any bearing on China's position, or does Beijing see other geopolitical opportunities from a West and Russia that is weakened by war?
Well, I think that it's well recognized and I think articulated on numerous occasions by China that the situation in Ukraine is a complex one. It really is not this simple black and white situation that some in the Western media portray, and that China has long taken a side in this conflict. And the side is that these disagreements that unfortunately have erupted into a military conflict should be resolved peacefully. And I'm not sure that I see this recent joint statement as a red line, but merely a reiteration of an existing principle that China has supported, in that any use of nuclear weapons or threat of use really should be discouraged. I think that we need to also look here that in the broader picture that the strategic rationale for NATO, which Lord Ismay, the first Secretary General, said, was to keep the Germans down, the Americans in, and the Russians out. And I think we're seeing perhaps this is the time for a new formulation. And China is not a party to these conflicts, but as you mentioned, certainly is affected from a trade perspective, from a geopolitical perspective as well. And certainly, I think, is working very diligently for an acceptable resolution, but through accepted organizations like the United Nations, I think, versus directly intervening. So I wanted to maybe clarify that China indeed is taking a side, and that's the side of peace and stable development.
Jaizeen, it looked to me like you were reacting to some of what Andy was saying and that maybe you wanted to jump in. So please go ahead if you want.
Yeah, for me, one point that I think was very interesting was when he mentioned that we might see changes here. And it's something that I really want to underscore in this entire conversation is this idea that German-China policy is going to have a really strong impact on what the EU is going to do in the next years strategically. Because when we're talking about this visit here today, it's not, or yesterday, it's not only about the very short-term outcomes, it's also about the long-term implications of this visit and how it is going to feed into, for example, the German-China strategy, which is currently being elaborated, but also the German national security strategy. Both documents will have a significant impact on Brussels and also on how the EU might reconsider its approach to China, because I want to recall that the EU's last really comprehensive or more comprehensive document on China was the EU-China Strategic Outlook from 2019. But today's China is not the China we saw 5 years ago. And this is why whatever we, whenever we are talking about Germany's role in this conflict here and how Germany could potentially pressure China, influence China, this might also a bit determine how it does that in the future and also how the EU might adjust its course.
GA, Berlin had said before this trip by Chancellor Scholz that there had been consultations with key partners in the U.S. and Europe ahead of the visit. Do we have any indication or do we know what came out of those consultations?
Well, obviously, if you observe the press release and the press conference between Scholz and Li Keqiang yesterday, they have not really been short of criticisms and warnings regarding different issues, different contentious geopolitical issues such as Taiwan, within Scholz's comments. So obviously, I think the German chancellor has already taken into account what the European allies, American allies have in mind on the one hand. But I think on the other hand, he has also addressed the German industry and businesses' concern regarding the lack of access to the market, the level of playing field, you know, those old long list of complaints as usual. So I think before this visit that the expectation is relatively low. And for what he has achieved yesterday, I think that's a reasonable success as far as we can get. So we can see this seems to be quite a lot of input from European partners, wasn't it? And also from the other side of the Atlantic. I have no doubt about it.
Andy, you know, Angela Merkel had been criticized since leaving office for her policy of trying to use trade to win influence with countries like Russia, though she would argue that that was the right course. Now, Olaf Scholz's government has abandoned this approach with Russia, but there are divisions within it about how to approach China. How does this get resolved at the end of the day? Can human rights trump trade, or can they agree to disagree on these issues while still doing business?
No, I think that certainly these issues have their own lanes, and in certain of these areas, countries can agree to disagree. You know, if we look at the situation with Xinjiang, Hong Kong, some of these other issues, I think the German view has been that these are not domestic issues. And clearly, China does view them as domestic issues. But again, I think these can be in their own lane and be compartmentalized. I think what's more important to point out here is that within this situation that Germany is facing, and I completely agree with the previous comments made, that this will certainly have implications for the EU as well in its relations with China, but that Germany and other countries in Europe are really discovering the ruinous cost of wedding themselves to a U.S. dogmatic view of a destructive competition with China, and arguably the same with Russia as well. You know, if we go to this idea of indivisible security, which Russia has talked about and is also a cornerstone of China's global security initiative, that these are really legacy issues of the existing security order that needs to be updated. And we may see some dramatic changes. I would say that a lot of the chatter about this mistake that Germany has made, change through trade, you know, we may be overreacting to this, that it's a certain minority of activists and media that are trumpeting this story. But the pragmatism that Germany is showing, I think, will ultimately prevail not only in Germany, but also in Europe vis-a-vis China.
Jazeen, when we talk about human rights concerns when it comes to China, you know, the West, they're concerned about the treatment of Uyghur Muslims. They're concerned about China's intentions towards Taiwan as well. That's another issue. You know, Chancellor Scholz had promised a candid exchange with President Xi on sensitive subjects. Based on what you've seen after this meeting, do you think that's the case? Was there a substantive discussion about these issues?
Well, that's always hard to say if you haven't been part of these exchanges, right, and if you're only observing from the outside. I think the fact that it has been mentioned is already a baby step in the correct direction. But here again, I would like to link that to the comments of the previous speakers. It's always about a certain pragmatism and about balancing the question of human rights or around situating it in the overall approach that you have. And really making clear that when it comes to human rights and the conceptualization of these, it is there is no point of agreement between Europe and China. And when we look at how the EU describes its relationship with China as a partner, competitor or rival, it's clear which of the three applies here. Whereas in other parts, it is also clear that cooperation with China, for instance, on climate or development in some regards might be the way to go. So I don't know how candid or how open and frank this exchange was. But for me, the fact that Scholz had the entire package of bringing in human rights, of bringing in security issues, of bringing in global affairs with Ukraine, and of course also talking economics, shows that this idea of a more compartmentalized approach is now really infusing German-China policy, and that Germany, I would say, to the benefit of the EU, is really abandoning that paradigm of change through trade.
Jie, how much does all this set the stage for a significant improving of relations between Germany and China? And also, how much does all this benefit Germany? How much potentially might it benefit Europe? And how much does it benefit China? Who benefits most in the long term from what's gone on?
Well, it's very hard to make a calculation on balance sheet at this moment, but I don't think, you know, the change through trade would still continue to be the main policy for the Germany or for much large part of Europe anyway, because Europe has changed, geopolitics has changed, and also China itself has changed. So that is leaving aside, it really takes two to tango. That change has already happened. And of course, it requires various stakeholders in this game to change their tacks as well. Mm-hmm. So I would actually see that the relationship between China and Europe, and also the relationship between Beijing and Berlin, will become more fractious rather than more smooth, even if we do have the visit in here. But how Scholz himself be able to balance the different voices within Berlin? You know, on the one mm-hmm. hand, you have foreign ministry, then economic ministry. Mm-hmm. Then on the other hand, you have the chancellery. You know, who is actually, could really German government speaking with one voice? And perhaps not. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the case, like the London government, like in the UK, whereas the Treasury and the Foreign Office is not speaking on the same page on China as well. So I think ultimately this sense of competition and cooperation will be intertwined within this bilateral relations between China and Germany, but also with EU and China as well. And I think that's what we're going to continue to experience as the way comes along. And even if that would be represented mm-hmm. quite acutely in the G20 as well, I mean, on the one hand, China and Germany also have interest on the development issues, on the debt suspension and relief issues for developing countries. However, on the other side, we can admit that China and Germany will never be on the same page when it comes to ideology. So I'm afraid we just have to navigate through that very precarious environment as where we are now.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Andy Mok, Jazeen Weber, and Yu Jie. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.